The UK is weeks away from a general election, which has been hailed as the most exciting and unpredictable one in decades. And much of the focus is on the Muslim community, which could change the political landscape of the British Parliament, according to some. Around 100 MPs in marginal seats could lose out if the Muslim minority groups vote as a bloc group. However, there are those within the Muslim community who believe voting is forbidden, while others are so disenfranchised they feel there's no point to the process. On top of that, the UK electoral system is disproportional and doesn't reflect accurately the desires of voters. So while the Lib Dems are predicted to get a 20% share of the national vote, the reality is they probably won't achieve more than 60 seats in Parliament. However, Engage is a new political pressure group which has launched a campaign called Get Out and Vote, designed to galvanise the Muslim community to participate fully in the general and local elections this year. It remains to be seen if its campaign will work. Today's agenda asks the question, Britain, should the UK count on the Muslim vote? Well, Parliament has been dissolved and the race is on, but will the runners and riders rely on the Muslim vote to get them elected? At least 80 seats, if not more, could change if the Muslims get out and vote. That's the view anyway of Raza Nadeem from the Muslim Public Affairs Committee, MPAC UK, which has launched its biggest ever campaign to mobilise the Muslim communities. But will they act? He's doubtful. Meanwhile, Ahmed Versi, the editor of Britain's oldest and most successful Muslim newspaper, The Muslim News, also believes the political landscape could change. But who is he telling his readers to support? He has, after all, interviewed most of the political leaders. Shamil Jorda is from YouElect, another independent initiative aimed at promoting voter registration and political engagement. He believes that they could play a decisive role for future elections. But what about the here and now, Shamil? Is this how the, you know, how key is the role going to be of Muslim voters?
As we saw in the clip, that we've got about 80 constituencies where the Muslim vote can count. The black minority ethnic vote has about 100 votes. I think specifically for the Muslim community, I think that we've targeted YouElect 56 constituencies where we see there is a large enough Muslim constituency, even if it's not a whole block, if a majority of that block votes a certain way, they can play a very unique role. They can play a very influential role in that.
But will they do it? I mean, people's biggest criticism of the British Muslim community is that it's not united.
Sure, I think it's not just the Muslim community in terms of voting. This is something that's general to the British community as a whole. There's lots of voter apathy at the moment because of the political climate, because of the expense scandal, because of the way politicians are. But within the Muslim community, I think there is this encouragement for the first time during these 2010 elections that for example, Reza's campaign, there's our Engage campaign, You Elect Ourselves. A lot of organizations, independent organizations, are coming on board and are finally saying, look, it's really important to engage. We have to engage. If we don't engage, there are going to be consequences. And those are, I suppose, we can cover later. But I think it's very important that all our organizations work together to ensure that, one, we're registered to vote, encourage Muslims to register to vote, and secondly, to make an informed choice on how they vote.
Raza, how crucial to you is this campaign, and why now? Why is there suddenly this scramble to get Muslims out and voting?
See, that's the thing. I mean, it's good that Muslim organizations are out there trying to get Muslims registered to vote and be politically active. However, it's something that can't be left too late. It's something that has to start from 3-4 years in advance to educate the community. What's happening is, I mean, we've been out door knocking, talking to Muslims about, look, you've got to register and make an informed decision, understand who your MP is and who you should vote for, and understand what their record is. And the thing is that to suddenly appear on their door and talk to them for 5 minutes is not enough. And I think our community needs to be much more politically aware and become much more politically conscious. So it's a shame that there's been a last-minute scramble, but at least we're doing something. But I think the lesson learnt is we need to, the day the elections happen, straight afterwards, we need to make sure we're mobilising for the next one, so our community's in an even stronger position.
Ahmed, we're hearing that between 50 and 100 seats could change if Muslims vote smart. Obviously, you don't employ 100 journalists. You're more limited in your resources, but you will be sending them out to key areas. Which are the key areas of interest for you?
I think there are many. Of course, it's very, very difficult. I mean, we have, especially in Yorkshire, for example, we have the Bradford East and West, which are quite important seats where things can change.
What's so interesting with the Bradford seats?
Because the Bradford seats, we have an incumbent Labour candidate there, and plus we've got a Tory candidate who has moved from Bradford East to Bradford West, for example, and he expects to win. And because these are kind of marginal seats, there have been predictions in the media and in surveys that there might be a move towards the Conservative Party. If it does happen, if it's like 5 to 6% as they predict, then I think it'll make a huge difference in Yorkshire and other Midlands, West Midlands, and in Lancashire areas as well. But of course, I think when we are discussing about encouraging people to vote, every elections we have this leadership coming up to tell us, or we wish we had started early, but we do it every 4 or 5 years. Why don't we, start from now for the next elections, for instance? We never do that, and this is a problem. I think it's the fault of our organization, the leadership. They always start doing things last minute.
How seriously do the political leaders take the Muslim vote? I mean, when you're interviewing them, do you get a positive response from them?
All the three party leaders, I think they are very much into Muslim votes, because they know, that this time round, because of the so-called hung parliament that might take place, and these marginal seats will make a huge difference. And because we have a high Muslim population in these marginal seats, they need to have the support of the Muslim vote.
So who are you telling the readers to go for? The Sun is backing the Tories, the Mirror is backing Labour.
And no, we've never in the last 20 years, we've never told our readers who to vote for. What we do is we give the views of the different parties and party leadership on the Muslim concerns, and then let the voter decide who they should vote for. Because it is important that you allow the readers to decide rather than you kind of dictating to them who they should vote for.
Shamil, is it a question that you elect is telling people who to vote for, or do you just want them to get out and vote?
I think it's really important that we don't tell people who to vote for. I think the community is educated enough to able to make their own decision. What we allow, just like Ahmed just mentioned, we ask people to go onto our website and make an informed choice. From there, you'll be able to see a number of things that their MPs have said, a number of things that they say they're going to do, what they have done, and with PPCs as well. What's their track record? What community engagement have they done? What kind of stances do they have on international affairs? What do they have on domestic policy, on education, on health? And make your own choice
on
that.
And who's funding you?
It's funded by different community organisations and individuals that have finally now realised together we need to actually engage politically.
Well, funny you should mention the word engage. There are several different initiatives around to encourage Muslims to vote, and Engage is one of them. Hassan Al-Khatib went out to find a little bit more about its political activities in the community.
British Muslims and ethnic minorities could play a decisive role in the forthcoming UK elections. That's according to a study carried out by a professor at the University of Warwick. A lot still needs to be done if ethnic minority communities are to be better represented in Parliament, and schemes have been rolled out in the UK to address this issue.
In each of your groups, you need to pick one constituency that you're going to come up with a plan. So in that constituency, or that locality, what are the sort of things that you're going to face as issues, and how are you going to overcome them?
I'm here at a training program organized by Engage. It's called the Get Out and Vote campaign, where they try to mobilize the Muslim community for the upcoming elections.
The aim of our campaign here is really to provide information and support to our community to get them to understand why it's so important for them to get out and vote. And then what we provide is some real practical guidance, support and advice for the individuals. So there's a practical example of how to hold a hustings, for example, in the local community, write a letter to your MP, what questions to ask, how to organize it.
If Muslims did engage properly in the political system, could they have a massive impact in the long term?
I personally think that Muslims can have a huge impact, especially now. You know, current analysis on this election is that very likely will be a hung parliament. So the minority groups here, if they can come out and actually vote and actively participate, I think hold the key to the future government in this country. And therefore, it is the best opportunity for Muslims to participate and have their views heard and let MPs know exactly what they would like to see.
Reza, you elect and engage are getting Muslims to get out and vote, but your organisation is actually telling them who they should vote for, aren't you?
Well, the thing is that the only reason why we're having to do it so short term, going out and telling people who to vote for is not something we, you know, openly do, not in all constituencies. However, in some areas...
Yes, you do it openly.
Well, no, not in all constituencies that we're campaigning in. I mean, for example, in areas like Leeds, we're actually actively campaigning to get Muslims to register to vote. The reason, though, why we're having to do that is because, like Ahmed said, Muslim groups come out and say we left it till last minute, and it's good that you're holding them to account. However, what's happening is the local institutions, like the mosques in the local area, they're not being held to account by the same standards. So what's happening is over that 4 or 5 year period where they should have been educated to make an informed decision, they haven't been, and then that's why we have to come in and say, look, your MP is X, has done X, Y, and Z. This is what they're standing for. You need to understand what they are what they say and what they mean and what they do and what they potentially do in the future.
Your organisation was blamed or responsible certainly for unseating Lorna Fitzsimmons in Rochdale.
Yep. I'm very proud of that, to get rid of a Zionist MP in the area, and that we mobilised a Muslim vote there. I mean, it showed that to have a couple of activists can change the scene of a constituency, the political scene. So if a couple of activists can do that, imagine if the entire community was active. So, I mean, that's our long-term goal. It's not just to have 2 to 5 activists
You've
in an area.
You've also got Jack Straw in the crosshairs as well.
Yep.
Which candidate standing against him?
In Jack Straw's constituency right now, I believe Galloway's... truth is we're not focusing on Blackburn this time round, because there are other constituencies where we feel the Muslim vote can be better mobilised, and our manpower can be much more better used so that Muslims make an informed decision and get out MPs that are Zionist or anti-Muslim. And make sure that the Muslim voice is heard on issues that are important to us.
Ahmed, I think it's an independent woman who's standing against Jack Straw in Blackburn, but just up the road in Birmingham there is a Muslim woman and there's a lot of attention on her. Can you tell me a little bit about her?
I mean, in the last elections, she had no political experience, and she was kind of an unknown figure. And she was standing for the Respect Party, and she managed to get over 10,000 votes against Roger Godsiff, who was a sitting Labour MP, and she just lost by 3,500 or so votes. I'm quite sure that during this election, she might get more votes than last year, and hopefully. And it seems that she might be able to overthrow, if I can call it that, Roger Godsiff. Of course, the boundaries have changed this time around, so it might be on her advantage that she might get more votes than she had last year, I mean, in the last elections.
I mean, if Salma Yaqub gets elected, that will have that will be news right across the world, won't it? Because she will become the first hijab wearing and the first Muslim woman to be elected into the House of Commons.
I think maybe two other Muslim women, physically non-hijabi, from the Labour Party might get in. For example, you have Yasmin Qureshi in Bolton, and she's about six to seven candidates that I believe might win the next elections, Muslim candidates. The best chance is with Yasmin Qureshi, because she's got over 10,000, it's a level strong of over 10,000. So she might come in, and Roshanara Ali in Bethnal Green and Bow. I mean, there's a possibility there, because the Muslim vote is divided. Now we have three Muslim candidates standing. We have for Respect, for Lib Dem, and for the Labour Party.
That's the seat vacated by George Galloway.
So it might be, and it's only 200 something votes, marginal seat. So it can go either way. And if the Lib Dem and the Lib Dem and Respect, if they take all the votes and it's divided amongst them, then I think Roshanara might get in by default. So I think we might have these two people, we might have three women, Muslim women.
From three different parties, which would be...
Say, in that area, in Bethnal Green and Bow, is actually Lib Dems, Bengali Muslim, Conservative, Bengali Muslim, Labour, Conservative Muslim, Green Party, Conservative Muslim. So for the first time, not only will we have a Muslim from that area, will have a Bengali from the area, from the constituency as well. So that will make history, the first Bengali MP in Parliament.
To add though, that obviously, I mean, it's good that we have Muslim candidates standing. However, it's important to understand that not all Muslim candidates are necessarily going to be vocal on issues that are important to Muslims. Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you have people who are wolves in sheep's clothing. So it is to be, it's important that we advocate and that we encourage Muslims to be involved in the political system, but they've got to be ethical candidates. And when people are casting their vote, they should make sure they're voting for an ethical candidate, not just by the fact that they wear the same Islamic label that they do.
Absolutely. I think all these three women, for example, I think will win, and there's others as well. They are vying for the Muslim vote, and they are saying that they would consider the concerns of the Muslim community and their issues when they are elected in the parliament. So I think then we can take them to account for the next elections if, for example, they do not fulfill what they have
definitely promised. But what I'm saying is that I think as for the Muslims in their local areas, they've got to be a bloc that votes on ethical issues. They're not bound by any party, they're not loyal to any party, they're loyal to ethical issues. And on that basis, if our community forms alliances on that basis, then we can get our voice heard on very important issues.
But that are going to I don't think we have any MP, any candidate who would stand and say, I'm going to only stand for Muslim issues. It is an impossibility, because they always represent their party.
It's not about Muslim issues necessarily, but issues that that resonate with the Muslim community. And I fully agree, just because a Muslim doesn't mean we should vote for them.
Yeah, of course.
We should vote for them on their track record, vote for them on their history, vote for them on how they have said that what they will do as well, Muslim or non-Muslim. And that's why, as I said, as you elect, we would say, make an informed choice. We like any other decision.
Park that thought for the time being. Here are some interesting facts about the world's Muslims and how they can influence elections both home and abroad.
25% of the world's population is Muslim. Approximately 50 countries have Muslim majority populations. Only 15% of Muslims are Arabs. 203 million Muslims live in Indonesia, making it the largest populated Muslim country in the world, followed by 174 million in Pakistan, 161 million in India, and 145 million in Bangladesh. 89% of Muslim voters in America chose Barack Obama. 2,422,000 is the number of Muslims living in Britain, compared to 42.6 million Christians. 4 is the number of Muslim MPs in the British Parliament: Sadiq Khan, Shahid Malik, Mohammed Sawar, and Khalid Mahmoud. Only one, Sadiq Khan, is a cabinet minister. 35% of voting Muslims, meaning those Muslims who are likely to vote, would vote Labour. This compares with 22% of voting Christians and 23% of the entire voting population, according to the Guardian newspaper in February. 49% of Muslims say they feel that the Labour Party has been the most friendly towards the Muslim faith over recent years. This is compared with 6% who believe that the Conservatives have been the most friendly party. This again is according to an article examining the same February poll. 50,000 Muslims now live in Scotland, but the majority settled in Glasgow, which has become an election battleground for the Muslim vote.
Ahmed, how engaged are Muslims in Britain politically compared to their counterparts elsewhere?
If you compare it to the Muslim countries, they're not as much engaged as they are in Muslim countries, for instance. But I think compared to other parts of Europe, they are much more engaged here. Even though, for instance, this year we might have less voter turnout generally, not just amongst Muslims. If you look at the last elections, because of the important issue of Iraq, we had a huge turnout by the Muslim community, because if you looked at the last elections where there were high Muslim populations, what you would find is that minority parties, said like Lib Dems or Respect, got huge amount of votes, and this was down to the Muslim votes. So it showed that the Muslim community, especially younger generation, can come out to vote if there are issues which they believe in that they have to vote for. So this time round, I don't think there is a major issue that would encourage young Muslims to come out.
What about the other minority parties? I mean, you've mentioned Respect, but what about the Greens as well? I mean, they should do very well in this election if it is going to be as open as people say.
I don't think so, and I think still Green Party will not get as many votes as people believe that they would. I mean, of course, they would get more votes if you look at if it was like proportional representation, then they might get into the parliament if generally. But because of the system that we have now, it'll be very difficult for Green
and
Party.
And what about the far right, like the BNP?
The BNP would have a chance to vote, might be able to have a chance to get in some areas if. Again, these are Muslim high Muslim population areas in East London, for instance. They might come in if the Muslims do not come out to vote. So I hope that the Muslims in those areas would encourage people to come out to vote, just to prevent the BNP to get in.
I think there's a couple of points if I could just mention on that. You mentioned about the youth vote, which is generally 56% of 17 to 24 year olds aren't registered to vote. 56%, that's a huge percentage. And if you look at the Muslim community, 50% are under the age of 25. So there'll
be
a massive bracket.
Why aren't they registered to vote, though? I've got a 17-year-old daughter, and she was notified that, you know, you're coming up to your 18th and you need to register.
I think there's a number of issues. As I mentioned at the beginning, there is that voter apathy that's surrounding people at the moment. And then also within the Muslim community, there are these democratic process which we get involved in, and then when we do get involved, we're tarnished as, oh, you're too political, why are you getting involved? For example, if we look at just recently with the Gaza protest, demonstrating your democratic right to protest, yet you go and protest, and then you're handed these sentences. That why? Because you're demonstrating, and they overhanded, strong-handed approach on demonstrators like that. And then you look at other organisations that encourage political participation, yet they're labelled as entrist or something along those lines. When you're told to engage, you're in trouble. If you don't engage, you're in trouble. So there is that element as well.
Well, I know that the Gaza protest is something that the agenda is looking at for a future show, but talking about the issue of Gaza, thousands of miles away, and yet it is the election issue in Rochdale. How on earth did that happen?
Thing is that with Muslims, as always with Muslims, every Muslim is linked to another. That concept of Ummah, that feeling of Ummah, is never going to go away. I mean, if you look at the Iraq War, yes, you can say it doesn't affect a Muslim in the country, although the fact is it does, because our soldiers are out there, money is being pumped into it, and plus, innocent Muslims are dying in the area. Same thing with Palestine. It would be criminal for a Muslim to forget about what's happening in Palestine. They can't do it.
Yes, and but how has it become an election issue in Rochdale?
The reason is
when elsewhere in Surrey, you know, they're concerned about cleaner streets and childcare.
Part of it is down to Muslim groups being out there and actually educating the community. They're saying that, look, this is an important thing at the end of the day. You know, what's happening in Palestine affects you as a Muslim and as an ethical human being. You cannot allow something unjust to happen. So what's happened in that area is the pushing of that up further up the agenda in the Muslim
so
mind.
So the Lib Dem MP, the Labour candidate, the Conservative candidate, they've signed papers saying that they support the Palestinian cause.
Well, regardless if whether they do it or not, the point is that the Muslims in that area have to make it such an important issue that the MP and any of the candidates standing there they will realise that, look, if we're not active on this issue, then the Muslims will make sure their voice is heard and come out and vote against us.
It's an interesting point, but we're heading towards a break now. As usual, there's a question. I want to know who said this.
Islam is the Trojan horse in Europe. Stop all immigration from Muslim countries, ban all building of new mosques, close all Islamic schools, ban burqas and the Quran. Stop Islamification. Enough is enough.
Stay tuned for the answer right after the news. Welcome back to today's edition of The Agenda with me, Vaughan Ridley, and studio guests Ahmed Versi, Raza Nadeem and Shamil Jorda. As we went into the break, I asked who said, Islam is the Trojan horse in Europe. Stop all immigration from Muslim countries, ban all building of new mosques, close all Islamic schools, ban burqas and the Quran, stop Islamification, enough is enough. Well, the answer is the so-called blonde bombshell, Geert Wilders. Some polls suggest that after the June elections, Mr. Wilders may lead the biggest single parliamentary party, raising the prospect that a former fringe provincial politician with extreme right-wing views could end up leading the Dutch country. Now then, Shamil, what sort of impact would that have in Europe, maybe in Britain?
Unfortunately, this is what's come about over the last few years of the anti-Islamicization, the anti-Islam, the anti-Muslim backlash, the Islamophobia in Europe. And now it's come to a stage where mainstream politicians are being elected on that premise of being Islamophobic. That's the premise they're elected upon.
But we don't have politicians like Geert Wilders in Britain, surely.
No, but it's going towards that. They're on the border. I think Martin Luther King said about Adolf Hitler that Adolf Hitler didn't do anything that was illegal in terms that he was elected, and then he went through that stage. And this is what's very, very scary about Geert Wilders and other MPs and the BNP and the far right and Nick Griffin in Dagenham, that these people are legitimized by the political press, by the discourse at the moment, and they're being elected. And then once they're elected, they can set these policies that will be detrimental. And this comes to our point about voting. People think about not voting, maybe that's okay, but let's just give an example. Let's break it down. There's 50 people. If 20 people vote BNP, 19 vote another party, for example, and 11 decide to abstain. By them abstaining or not voting, they've just given those votes to the BNP, and those policies are going to affect them whether they like it or not.
But some Muslims would argue, if I've got a choice between the BNP and a pro-war candidate, what is the point with voting for either of them?
Because you've got to look on your judgment, and this way, like any other decision, you research, you find out what's the best choice, and you go with the best choice.
Out
like
of
any
the
other
frying
decision.
Pan into the fire, the lesser of the two evils?
It could well be in certain situations. If it means that you're going to ask for a party that's asking for voluntary repatriation, of what we know what goes along with that, or someone who's pro-war, but then we can perhaps work with that person, then, you know, it's up to decisions for people to make their decisions.
Raza, you know, when you've got candidates there and you've got two boxes to tick, dumber and dumber, who do you vote for? Well, and what are you advising Muslim voters to do?
In those cases, I'd say vote for the one who's least dumb. But in the long term, it should be a lesson learned. that look, you can't wait until the election day when to cast your ballot saying, oh no, I've got to choose between one evil person and another evil person. It should be a lesson that, no, in the years to come leading up to the election, we should make sure that they are listening to us on issues that are important to us. The reason why many Muslims in some constituencies are going to find themselves in this position is because they've never ever come out as a bloc and made their voice heard on very important issues. So obviously, if you're not someone that's to be taken seriously on certain issues, why would an MP or a candidate try to work for your vote or try to listen to your issues?
Ahmed, what's so different about this election?
I think this time round, because of the way the whole the media have been campaigning actually to first they're saying well, we're going to have a landslide for the Tories, and now we are saying that it's going to be a hung parliament. And what is going to happen is that many people will come out to vote, say in an area where there are you have a Labour incumbent, you have a Tory, and then you have a Lib Dem number three. They'll say, well, to prevent it to become to make sure that it is a hung parliament, let's vote for Labour, for instance, because people are saying that the Tories are going to come in if we don't vote for Labour. So even though you might dislike that person from the Labour Party, you would still vote for him to prevent that thing happening. So I think it is going to be a very sophisticated kind of a voting pattern this time around all over the country. People might not vote the way they would like to have voted in general elections.
Raza, what sort of feedback are you getting from people when you knock on their door and ask them, you know, to vote? Do they slam the door shut, or, you know, what's the reaction?
Well, no, you know, the tide is actually turning slowly. Muslims are slowly becoming more politically conscious and more politically mature to realise who their MP is. And we've had more people, I mean, in comparison to the last general election where we had to really fight to get Muslims to get out to vote, this time we're having a lot more Muslims come up to us saying, look, we understand, we agree, and that, look, we want to help out in the campaign, we want to get involved. I mean, yeah, the number of Muslims coming back to us saying that, look, voting doesn't make a difference has decreased. The only thing, though, is that we're letting this tide turn on its own accord. We need to, as Muslim organizations, and more importantly, as the local institutions in those areas, like the mosques and other community groups, need to be catalysts to spur on change in the Muslim mindset, so they become much more politically aware in a shorter amount of time.
Well, before I come back to you, Shamil, there are those in the community who say voting is forbidden, and others who think the opposite, as Hassan Al-Khattab investigates.
Because voting is definitely not kufr.
Uncertainty over whether voting is permissible in Islam have been floating around. But in this video made by the Get Out and Vote campaign, brought together some of the most prominent Islamic scholars in the UK to dispel such myths.
I'll be voting because scholars vote as well.
There is a lot of work to be done up and down the country and every community in order to encourage Muslims and educate Muslims about the importance of the political process and how it works.
But with many British Muslims feeling alienated from the political system, could this be a difficult barrier to overcome?
To overcome Muslim apathy, we have to address those issues which concern the Muslim community, whether it be foreign policy, national policy, or at a local level. And across the UK, we are a very significant minority that if it was to be educated and understood the system of voting and the political process, we could create a massive impact.
Before I come to you, Shamil, Ahmed, I just want to quickly ask, how prevalent is the haram lobby?
I mean, it is quite popular in some areas, the so-called haram lobby, especially in London. But I think the major issue is not the issue of haram lobby. As I think one of the persons said in this video, the issue is about apathy. It is general, it's not just down to the Muslim community. It's because of the scandal that we've had in the parliament. People don't trust the members of parliament anymore. The issues of concern.
But they've got a right, haven't they? I mean, look at all of the MPs who were caught with their hands in the till fiddling the expenses.
But how do we know it won't happen in future? I mean, this is this is the whole point. And people have lost trust in the members of parliament. So I think the issue in this elections will not be because of it is haram to vote or not. It's because of the general apathy in the British community in this country.
Mm-hmm. Shamil, you were bursting to come in before.
I forgot what I was going to say before, but in terms of following on from that point, in terms of how much impact does the anti-vote campaign have, as it were, I think it complements each other. What you were saying about the people being apathetic towards voting, I think that's there. So it's hard enough to engage people to vote in the first place. Yeah. And then when outside the mosque, when you're giving out leaflets to tell people, to encourage people to vote, and you've got a voice there saying, don't vote, it's haram, it's shirk. When you don't want to vote anyway, then someone telling you it's not right, then you're like, maybe not. So it's that that can play in people's head. It's not a strong campaign to say not to vote, but it's there nonetheless, and it's quite vocal.
Do the politicians want an engaged, active Muslim community, or would they prefer the community just to remain quiet?
I think they'll prefer to remain quiet, purely because, for example, I'll give an example. Recently, I was outside a mosque, and I saw an MP there, remain unmentioned, and he was obviously asking for the Muslim vote. So I just said, okay, went up to him and asked, so where do you stand on 40-day detention? Then immediately he sidestepped me, not wanting to talk to me. And I said, okay, where do you stand on the Iraq war? Oh, come speak to me later. Then I said, okay, regarding what's happening in Gaza, oh, let's talk later. So the point is, If that community there, in that particular area, was a bit more educated or informed in terms of what that MP stood for, then that person wouldn't have that margin of victory.
Okay, which big scalps are going to be taken in this general election? What big names are vulnerable now?
I think there are a few marginal seats. If we look at London, for example, you can look at Battersea, Martin Linton, one of the slimmest majorities in the country, I think majority 153. You look at Andrew Slaughter, one of the typical...
But Martin Linton has been quite vocal for the Muslim community, hasn't he? I mean, he has standing up and for the last British detainee in Guantanamo, Shaka Rama. He's gone to Washington, so I would imagine that he would get the Muslim support.
Sure, but once again, the problem is that not all the community in his constituency are engaged politically, and this is where UELECT and other organisations need to work with the community and encourage people to vote. Because otherwise, with the work that Martin's done, for example, people may say that the Muslim community would vote in that direction. But once again, you've got to look at the other parties, etc., and see
I want to disagree with the argument that the establishment or the politicians do not want Muslims to engage in the political process. I think they do. All the if you look at a lot of projects that the government is encouraging young Muslims to go out and vote, to go out and participate in the political process, even though it's in a negative way, in the sense that they want to prevent them from becoming extremists or going to those kind of camps.
You're talking about prevent, which is being discredited.
I don't necessarily mean prevent. I mean generally as well. You find that there's a huge amount. For example, we organize these debates between young Muslims and political leaders in the House of Parliament. It's not nothing to do with prevent, and we are getting support from all the parties. You know, the cabinet ministers, shadow ministers, they come to engage with the young people because they believe that it is important for young people to engage with
that's
the political
process. I don't agree on that. I see where you're coming from, but getting people out to vote is not the same as getting them to be much more politically active. I mean, if you look at what happened with IFE, is a great example. They were getting active and they're being slammed, saying, oh no, they're trying to Islamicize politics.
The IFE, that stands for?
The Islamic Forum of Europe. Mm-hmm. They were getting active in their local area. You're saying...
No, but that's from the directly and lobbies, which is different. Yeah, we are talking about general establishment. I think generally, we have politicians who want to encourage people to vote, even to go at, I mean, there's funding, for example, not necessarily from prevent, from Ministry of Justice, for instance, is to encourage people to participate in democracy, which is part of going out to vote. You have election
commission. See where you're coming from.
They're all giving so much funding to Muslims and non-Muslims to encourage young people to vote.
But when you take government money, doesn't that affect your integrity?
In a way, it is a poison chalice, taking government money for some in the local area. But I just want to come back to what Ahmed was saying. I agree that it's good they're getting Muslims out to vote. However, if Muslims became much more politically aware and conscious in some constituencies, the MPs in those areas would be shaking in their boots because they've got away with, open murder. I mean, there's one, a local constituency on my own, actually, where we're out canvassing, and the NP thinks we're spreading poison about him. Those are his own words, we're spreading poison about him. But the fact is, we're just showing his voting record. So in some cases, it might not necessarily be ideal for an MP to have a politically aware Muslim community, but that's why it means just puts the pressure on us as Muslim groups and other institutions like the mosque to make sure we're politically aware, because otherwise our community is being robbed.
And do you think the mosques can do much more than they're doing?
So much more. They definitely mean.
But surely they're concerned with the spirituality of their community.
But at the end of the day, like you said, about Gaza became a big issue in Rochdale. How can you be a spiritual Muslim if you do not care about when other Muslims are affected?
Well, Kirti Karai went to the home of the British Parliament to conduct her own poll, and this is what she found.
I'm in central London today, and behind me, Parliament, where all our votes count. But could you say the same about British ethnic minorities? Let's get their opinion. Should you vote by candidate?
Well, it depends what kind of constituency you're in, really. I mean, you obviously favour one political party, but because of the British first-past-the-post system, you may be better voting for candidate to stop the other one getting in, if that makes sense.
If there are particularly strong local issues, then yeah, I'd probably go by candidate. But at the times like this, I think there's kind of, it's more of a national question, so I'd probably be more inclined to vote by party at the moment.
Do you think voting systems in UK are fair compared to other democracies which operate equally and give better representation?
I don't know whether they're fairer, but I might still prefer the British system, just because if you have, say, a coalition of 20 smaller groups, I don't know how you ever get anything done. I mean, obviously things do get done in other countries in practice, but I just think having one major party in charge is probably going to be more effective.
Well, it's not proportional representation, so it's in some ways the first past the post system is less democratic, but in other ways it creates a greater continuity of political parties, so you don't get kind of a muddiness that you might in some other member states or European countries.
Do you think ethnic groups like Muslim voters have more influence by foreign policy and domestic issues?
What, do I think they have more influence than people who live in Britain?
Yeah.
No, presuming that the British people bother to go and vote, then obviously every vote counts equally.
A lot of people really are influenced by issues that are most specific to them. So I suppose it depends how you define yourself. If you're very strongly defined by your ethnic background, then you'll be more attracted to issues that speak directly to that.
Heard the public opinion when it comes to British voting system. And that's all for me, Kirti Karai, for The Agenda.
Shamil, were there any great surprises for you there?
No, not really. It's quite interesting that you saw from the clip that a lot of people vote according to what's important to them. And that's what's important, that's quite interesting, because as a mother, you'll be inclined towards maybe childcare, maybe what provisions there are. You also be interested in the healthcare system, the education process, and also as a Muslim, you'll be interested in issues such that directly affect you, such as 42-day detention, such as foreign policy in countries that with the Muslim countries. So it'll be that affiliation. But in terms of going back one step before the clip, we talk about engagement with Muslims. There is that engagement with Muslims, I admit that. But unfortunately, the engagement is through the narrow narrative of that prevent agenda. There are other things, but the majority of that engagement is through the prevent agenda, and that has to change. If we're going to have real engagement, then that has to definitely change. And that's under review, I believe, anyway.
Ahmed, what about women in this election? How significant is the women's vote going to be from the Muslim community?
As I understand that, if you take the percentage-wise, people who have registered to vote, less women, Muslim women, have registered to vote, and maybe therefore less Muslim women are going out to vote. So how
why do you think that is? Because, I mean, you've got somebody like Saeeda Varsi, who's probably the most influential woman in British politics, Baroness Varsi. She wasn't elected, but she is in the House of Lords and will have a place in the cabinet should the Conservatives win.
We don't have any Muslim women in the parliament, for instance, in the House of Commons. We have some in the House of Lords. So, I mean, there's no role models there for our young women, especially in the parliament. And they believe that, you know, maybe it is very, very difficult for Muslim women to be elected into the parliament. However, this time round, when we might have at least three, hopefully, Muslim women who would be elected in the parliament, then I think it will encourage more women to register to vote and maybe participate in the voting process in the next elections.
In terms of women, the youth and ethnic minorities, I think that is an issue that needs to be tackled politically. We were talking about earlier about who wants to register to vote and they feel like they don't want to register to vote. Sometimes, especially for the youth, they look at the parliament, they look at the representatives and they think, okay, how can they represent my views? The parliament does not represent the views that they work for, that does not represent the community they represent. So this is something that needs to be addressed. So you need to have more representation, you need to have more women, you need to have more Muslims, you need to have more ethnic minorities. And that's where, you know, organisations, not just around this table, but organisations...
Well, if you were, like, targeting the youth and targeting women voters...
We've got a specific leaflet coming out for the youth, aimed towards the youth in terms of the importance of... vote registration, why and what the consequences are of not registering to vote as well.
Well, in the final few seconds, in 12-15 seconds, tell me, are we looking at a hung parliament?
I think all indications show that we're going towards a hung parliament.
Ahmed?
I'm still not convinced. It might be hung parliament, or it might be, I think, the Tories might come in.
Raza?
I mean, I think it might be hung parliament, but the point is the Muslim vote is going to play a very decisive factor, so Muslims need to get out and vote, intelligently.
Well, that message is certainly very clear there. So Tories, Conservatives, Labour, Lib Dems, Greens, all the other minority groups, the message is just get out and vote for party or people.
We encourage people to look at the track record of MPs.
So you would say people, party or people?
I think it's your own member of parliament in your own constituency.
It has to be candidate by candidate basis, because there's good and bad in every party.
Well,
you can't look at it that way, it's candidate by candidate.
People above politics, interesting. We've reached that time of the show where we head over to James Rawson in our electronic post room for the views of voters around the world.
Well, the election campaign is well underway across Britain, but the really sizzling debates are being held by agenda viewers and voters on Facebook. Scores of you piled in with your views about why voting is haram and why it's not. It seems that the only thing you can agree on was to disagree. Londoner Orso Ul Akhtar said, "As Muslims, we are obliged to look at voting, like any other issue, from an Islamic perspective. Voting for a man who would rule, judge, or do actions that are approved by the Islamic Sharia, such as we saw at the time of the Khilafa Rashida, is permissible, and indeed desirable. However, in the forthcoming UK parliamentary elections, Muslims are being told to vote for people who would be lawmakers in Britain's secular political system, whose root and branch is built upon man's sovereignty, rather than that of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This would clearly be haram." However, Londoner Mariam Ali said well-known and respected Sheikh Haitham al-Haddad had already advised Muslims to take part in the upcoming vote. He said, "The scholars unanimously agree that one of the main purposes of the Sharia is to maximize the benefit and minimize the evil, even eliminate it if possible. Selecting a candidate in an election is simply a matter of choosing the lesser of two evils." Last year, the BNP won seats not because their voters had increased, rather, the less had turned out to vote for the opposition. In reality, there is really no such thing as abstaining from voting. By abstaining, you will indirectly help the leading candidate. Hence, there are some candidates who favour a low voter turnout. And another Londoner, Ibrahim Mohammed, wrote, "Why should I vote Labour when they support Israel and are part of the so-called war on terror? Why should I vote for the Tories who support the same causes? Why should I vote for the Lib Dems when they support the same causes?" And Reading's Imran Hanafi Zeb was just as forthright, this time in favour of voting. He countered, "Muslims should vote. It is a religious obligation." And his response caused a big stir in Manchester with Sulaiman, who fired back, "It is not a religious obligation to vote in a democratic state, nor is it permissible." And it all got too much for Shahan Nizar, who stormed, "I am absolutely appalled with the number of Muslims here who have mentioned that it is not permissible to vote. In fact, the Prophet, peace be upon him, did mention that one should respect the laws of the country he lives in, even if it were not to be an Islamic country." And from there, it all got rather personal and heated. So Shahista Sultana from Jhelum in Pakistan waded in. "I wouldn't mind standing up for election. I know one thing, I fear Allah and sincerely care about this country and its people. Anyone think I should stand?" "Well, if you can restore peace and unity to the Agenda's Facebook account, Shahista, you've definitely got my vote." And meanwhile, in the holy city of Medina, regular Agenda viewer Dr. Ahmed Mustafa enjoyed our recent programme, which asked, "What happened to the great in Great Britain?" His text message read, "We are looking up to the honest people in Great Britain to support the truth everywhere. Freedom for all peoples, peace and preservation of the environment, to resist tyranny, wars, the military-industrial complexes, etc. This will let you be really great and a world leader." Sounds like an election speech to me. Seems there's no escaping them today. But that is unfortunately all we've got time for. So if you'd like to be in touch, then please send your emails to theagenda@presstv.com. You can also contact us on Facebook or text us at +44 780 00 0806. If you want to watch one of our past shows, simply log on to the website at presstv.com. Once there, click on the programs icon, then click on the agenda panel, and there's a selection of past shows for you to choose from. Thanks for watching, and back to you in the studio.
Thanks for that, James. Well, that just remains for me to say a very big thank you to all of our guests, and we'll see you all soon on the next agenda.